The Calico Cat by Charles Minor Thompson. Chapter 1. The Calico Cat. Mr. Peasley looked more complacent than ever. It was Saturday noon, and Solomon had just returned from his usual morning sojourn up street. He had taken off his coat and was washing his face at the sink while his wife was dishing up the midday meal. There was salt codfish, soaked fresh and stewed in milk. Picked up, as the phrase goes. There were baked potatoes and a thin, pale-looking pie. Mrs. Peasley did not believe in pampering the flesh, and she did believe in saving every possible cent. "Well," said Mr. Peasley as they sat down to this feast, "I guess I've got news for ye." His wife gazed at him with interest. "Are ye drawed?" she asked. "Got the notice from Whitcomb right in my pocket. Grand juror? September term. 'Tain't more than a week off." The staccato utterance was caused by the big mouthfuls of codfish and potato, which, between phrases, Mr. Peasley conveyed to his mouth. It was plain to see that he was greatly pleased with his new dignity. "What do they give ye for it?" asked his wife. Solomon should accept no office which did not bring profit. "$2 a day, and mileage," said Mr. Peasley, with the emphasis of one who knows he will make a sensation.
"Mileage? What's that?"
"Travelin' expenses. State allows ye so much a mile. I get 8 cents for goin' to the courthouse."
"Ye get 8 cents every day?" asked his wife, her eyes snapping.
She was vague about the duties of a grand juror. Maybe he had to earn his $2, but she had exact ideas about the trouble of walking up street. To get 8 cents for that was being paid for doing nothing at all, and she was much astonished at the idea. "Likely now, ain't it?" said Mr. Peasley with masculine scorn. "State don't waste money that way. Mileage is to get ye there and take ye home again when term's over. You're supposed to stay round 'tween whiles."
"Humph," said his wife, disappointed. "They give ye $2 a day," she hazarded the shot, "just for settin' round talkin', don't they? Walkin's considerable more of an effort for most folks."
"Settin' around talkin'?" exclaimed Mr. Peasley, so indignant that he stopped eating for a moment, knife and fork upright in his rigid, scandalized hands, while he gazed at his thin, energetic, shrewish little wife.
"Settin' round and talkin'? It's mighty important work, now I tell ye. I guess there wouldn't be much law and order if it wasn't for the grand jury. They don't take none but men owe judgment. Takes gumption, I tell ye. Ye have to pay money to get that kind."
"Well," said his wife, with the air of one who concedes an unimportant point, "anyhow, it's good pay for a man whose time ain't worth anything."
"Ain't worth anything!" exclaimed Mr. Peasley in hurt tones. "Now, Syrup Tea, ye know better than that. I don't know how they'll get along without me up to the bank. They've got a pretty good idea of my judgment about mortgages. They don't pass any without my say-so."
Mrs. Peasley sniffed. "I've seen ye in the bank window settin' round with Jim Bartlett and C. Spooner and the rest of 'em readin' the paper. That's all I ever see ye doin'. Must be wearin' on ye."
"Guess you never heard what was said, did ye? Can't hear 'em thinkin', I guess. They're mighty shrewd up to the bank, mighty shrewd."
They had finished their codfish and potato, and Mrs. Peasley, without giving much attention to her husband's testimony to the business acumen of his banking friends, and incidentally of himself, pulled the pale, thin pie toward her and cut it up.
"Pass up your plate," said she.
When his plate was again in place before him, Mr. Peasley inserted the edge of his knife under the upper crust and raised it so he could get a better view of its contents. He had his suspicions of that pie. What he saw confirmed.